Ladies and gentlemen, welcome wrestling fans worldwide to Knoxville and the Great Smoky Mountains for the Ron Fuller Tennessee Studcast.
6 feet 9 inches tall, 265 pounds.
This historic podcast from one of the most respected and successful wrestlers and promoters will follow the footsteps of the largest and oldest wrestling family on the planet.
Listen to what I'm saying. That's right. Bring that camera in here a little bit closer.
Through 93 years and four generations.
The stud has arrived.
Old school or new fan, this unique broadcast will educate and captivate as Ron details decades of professional wrestling's growth with truly unforgettable stories.
I want those people out there at home to hear the stud.
Sit back and enjoy the ride with the Tennessee Stud.
The Tennessee Stud. You will learn that name. You will remember it.
And now,
the stud is here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome in. It's David Summers, and here comes another Studcast with the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller. This is the story of wrestling in America as told by the stud, whose family started the profession over 100 years ago. So now, let's step back into the ring, back into time. Let's get wall-to-wall, tree-top tall, with the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller. Hey, welcome everybody to our New Year's Day party. You've joined us for a great one. I know that you've had everybody's had a busy Christmas, and I know, Ron, you had a very busy Christmas this year. You released your new streaming channel, TennesseeStudStreaming.com, last week on Christmas Day, and it is off to a great start, so congratulations are definitely in order.
Well, thank you for that, Dave, man, and it certainly is. It really is off to a great start, and I want to thank all the fans out there and those that have already subscribed for their great comments about the contents that they're seeing on the streaming channel, and it's already becoming a part of what I had envisioned and hoped for. When I started this, I had the idea of what I wanted to do, and, we kind of committed to add content every day to this. We've continued to, and we're going to do so for a long time into the future. It's going to take some time before we get anywhere near having everything I have done over the last 7 years on the TennesseeStudStreaming.com channel. I'm going to continue to be doing things, Dave. That's it.
It has to be kind of an exciting time for you, having worked on this project for months, and today, New Year's Day 2025, you are bringing us another first-time-ever event for your extremely popular studcast. That's so cool.
That's right, Dave. And today, later in this studcast, we're going to be able to show fans for the first time some of the two actual Southeastern matches that were recorded 44 years ago, third week of December 1980. They're going to be inserted for the first time ever into this studcast, and we'll be discussing them later.
All right, that's fantastic news, Stud. For the first time, we're going to be able to see ourselves, what you've been describing to us for years. I think that's really awesome.
The best thing about this day is the fact that this is only the first of hundreds of original matches, personality profiles, interviews from not just Southeastern Wrestling TV shows from 1980 to 1985, but Continental Championship Wrestling TV shows from 1985 to 1987. And finally, the USA TV shows from 1988, when I actually finished my wrestling career.
I tell you what, that covers everything from 1981 to 1989, at least 7 more years of wrestling TV shows. So if you continue to do the studcast, that's huge. All right. So in this last studcast, you said these future years that you just mentioned were the best years of your 18-year wrestling career. So now, with selected parts of the actual TV shows from those years added to the studcast, I can only imagine how good the coming studcasts are going to be. No doubt.
Well, think about it, man. How much enjoyment they'd get, when they go to TennesseeStudStreaming.com, that channel. Wow, the enjoyment is just going to be amazing, man. They're going to have an entire library of existing TV shows to watch, all old school. and all of them really, really classic. At this point, there'll be no place like it.
So, I mean, literally hundreds of hours of old school TV wrestling shows alone for your fans and for less than $5 per month. So if you're a fan of old school wrestling, it is definitely the best deal anywhere out there. All right, speaking of best deal, where are we riding today, Stud?
Well, I want to start with a short ride and kind of an explanation to our readers about how we were able to find so many of my classic TV shows from 1980 that I've been working on, this project, basically. And this project started 2 or 3 years ago. And through most of this great decade of wrestling, which is the 1980s that we're in at this point, and we're going to talk about how the stars have changed from one wrestling company to the next. Basically, a conversation about how almost everything changed with wrestlers and wrestling in the decade of the 1980s. So from what they drove, basically, to how they trained, to how the money they made dramatically changed as well. So, and then we're going to head off into the third week of December 1980 with a tremendous card, man, with three going to end up leaving Southeastern in the same week. And they're not going to be coming back for quite a while. And we're also going to see for the first time a complete TV match, a short video from one of the extremely important Loser Leaves Southeastern matches on today's card. And this will be just one of the first of many videos in the new studcast that are going to allow me to do what no wrestling podcast basically has ever done. And basically that would be explain my thoughts, what my actual thoughts were when I was putting together these TV shows, and then show the actual angles, what happened through the eyes of the camera, recording the actual match.
All right, so, I mean, I've never heard it described quite like that before, but that is exactly what is going to happen in this studcast today. That is awesome.
So we're going to focus, man, on the Southeastern card for the third week in December 1980. We're going to cover the TV show. On some of it, in a way, never done before on a studcast. We're going to be doing two matches, two different videos today. And we will also give the results of the live matches and the attendances, like we do always in the four major cities. And then, Dave, hopefully, we're going to have time maybe for another learning tree question.
All right, so this sounds to me like a really important studcast. I can't wait to get to that first ever piece of real video from a match during the week we're going to be discussing. All right, so what do you say, Stud? Shall we start riding?
Oh, definitely, man. This is going to be fun, man. So let's begin with a brief explanation of how we found so many Southeastern, Continental, and USA actual TV shows. So let's start with Southeastern for this, the oldest company, the first company that I established. And obviously, those TV shows were the most difficult to find. We only have, in fact, one complete TV show from Southeastern Knoxville, and that show was from 1978. And thankfully, it gave fans an opportunity to basically see what kind of TV production Southeastern had. You know, we had become famous for it. And as a matter of fact, throughout all the wrestling territories in the world, we were said to have the best, actually. So everything else on the streaming channel came from the Southeastern Gulf Coast territory. And that's where we opened in 1978. They were all produced at the WTVY studios in Dothan, Alabama. They had the future Hulk Hogan, had some of his first matches ever on that TV station and in that studio. And I have been actively collecting random TV shows from this time frame for years now. And I'm still looking for more. So if you know anybody out there, if you know somebody that has some, then please contact me. You can contact me on my Ron Fuller Tennessee Stud Facebook page and let me know about it because I'm still searching for them. Continental wrestling shows, same thing. We began in the summer 1985 when Southeastern disappeared. The production of the show switched from a studio that maybe had about 200 people sitting on two sets of bleachers, and it was shot with only two cameras. We moved to a 6,000-seat Boutwell Auditorium in downtown Birmingham, had a new production company there, brought in these huge, two huge remote trucks, five cameras, top of the line production. And the host of the program was Gordon Solie. So, and then when we find many of those original shows, but we found a lot of them, but we're still looking for others. And again, if you know of any Continental Championship Wrestling, any CCW shows, any TV shows in the USA, I think we have most all of USA, but any Continental shows or Southeastern shows, contact me. Ron Fuller, Tennessee Stud, Facebook page. And I would love to hear your story. I'm looking for all I can find. And the last wrestling company I built, obviously, was USA Wrestling, 1988. That TV show was produced in a ballroom at the Knoxville Coliseum. And thankfully, I have all of those TV shows. So every one of the three companies' TV shows are placed on the streaming channel in the exact order they were produced. And the quicker we can find the new ones and add them to the collection, we'll be able to place them in the proper order as well.
All right. And explain why that's so important.
Well, you know, if it's kind of like if you were just, you know, having a random TV shows with little or no angles or storylines in them, it wouldn't be important. But our TV shows were full of lots more than just matches. They had great storylines. We had angles every week, and they were full of action. And each one basically told a story. So without being in the proper order, Dave, it would be kind of like reading a book, man, and skipping every other chapter, trying to make sense out of it.
All right, that's a good explanation. I kind of got you. All right, so how about telling us how the 1980s wrestlers were experiencing such rapid changes during that decade?
Well, I only experienced, man, two decades during my wrestling career. The 1970s, basically for me, they seemed like things changed very little, man. It was a much less intense decade for wrestlers than the 1980s. And it certainly didn't have the volatile ups and downs that the 1980s had. So much seemed to change in the 1980s, basically from the vehicles wrestlers drove to the way they trained and the money they made was basically absolutely everything changed between the 70s and the 1980s. So let's start with the vehicles that wrestlers drove as an example. The 1970s. And in the early 1980s, too, for a few years there, just a couple of them, though, it seemed like, the vehicle that everybody wanted to drive as a wrestler was one of those custom vans, man, where you could pack the guys in there and everybody had a big captain's chair. And, you know, it was the way to travel, man. And almost all the wrestlers in my territories back in those days, they drove vans, and they had lots of guys riding with them every night. Yeah. There was a party in the van every night, party going and coming, right?
And it was comfortable, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, man. And you know who was the biggest fan of the vans when he arrived? Andre the Giant.
That is exactly who I was going to guess.
Andre said, "This is my spot." He always had the second row, and they had by the door.
Yeah.
That was it. And you know, if you sat in Andre's seat, you had a problem. it was a big deal having those vans. And in the early 1980s, that changed dramatically. Guys started buying Corvettes and Porsches and sports cars, you know. And a good example is going to come basically about 6 weeks from now when we're talking about a match in Birmingham in January of 1981, and it was going to be the first of many car tournaments that we had in 1981 alone. Mm-hmm. And this first tournament in 1981 in Birmingham was going to be for a brand new Corvette, man.
Wow. And, wow.
So custom vans were suddenly out, man, and sports cars were in. So let's talk about how wrestlers handled their weight training, man, and boy, did that change dramatically in the 1980s. when it came to working out with weights for the first time, except for a few guys in the late 1970s, I hate to use the word, but steroids were in. I mean, you know, and all these wrestlers were focused on a quick way to build this muscle, man. And building muscle became the focus, especially for the younger wrestlers. And wow, it was in complete disregard for their future life and health. I mean, nobody knew much about this stuff. So it took off, man, in the early 80s. And it seemed like to most new wrestlers, if they were not totally bulked up, that they weren't going to ever have a chance of becoming a star in the sport. So when I look back now and I see so many wrestlers from that time frame that are no longer with us, man, I know what they were doing, and I had a lot of conversations with guys about what is this going to do to you in the future, and some guys never really got grasp that, but we've lost a heck of a lot of young guys. Sid Vicious,
yeah,
good example. I mean, you know, just lately, and he had a problem with that stuff.
Wow. You could definitely see that happening. All of a sudden, guys who had good builds before suddenly had these massive muscles bulging out. So, I mean, how about the money part of the difference? And let's talk about that. Move to money. The difference between the 70s and 80s. What was that like? You mentioned, obviously, the customized vans, which were really cool in the 70s, moving to sports cars in the 80s.
Yeah, well, this was the biggest difference of all, the money. I mean, as always in the sport, it depended on kind of where you were wrestling more than anything else as to how much money you were going to make. But most of the territories in the 1980s were experiencing these record crowds. They were jacking up their ticket prices, and that jacked up their money, the wrestlers' money as well as the promoters. And, you know, the buildings were getting bigger and all of that translated into the biggest payoffs in the history of the sport during the 1980s. And that didn't even include Vince McMahon stuff and Ted Turner's WCW company. For most wrestlers, it was a great time to be in the wrestling business.
I can imagine. I love these short rides you take us on. That was an extremely interesting little history lesson. All right, why don't you set us up with the card now? For Southeastern's third week in December, take us back to 1980.
Well, the opening match was Ricky Fields versus Oki Shekina. In the second match, it was Roy Lee Welch's time to experience Mr. Saito. That was a good way of putting Saito. Third match was for the United States Junior Heavyweight Championship, Norvell Austin was again facing the champion, Jerry Stubbs. Fourth match was finally the return match for the former Southeastern Tag Champions, Bob and Brad. They had won the belts, then they lost them real quickly, within a week, I think, to Condrey and Rose. And then Condrey and Rose refused to give them a return match for about 2 weeks. So they're about to get their return match and their chance to win the Southeastern Tag Championship back again. And this was where I came up with the first part of the title of this studcast. And basically, three more guys were going to be gone with this card. Crazy, man, because that was happening in the last two matches of this card. So there's going to be three guys leave in just two matches. So the fifth match was the loser leave Southeastern tag team match, with a special stipulation that both men on the losing team had to leave Southeastern Wrestling immediately. That was the Mongolian Stomper and Don Carson. They were against me and Johnny Valiant. Tennessee Stud. I better call him Tennessee Stud. I prefer to do that. I don't think he wants me to call him me. So the last match of the night was only, it was not only another bull rope match, but additionally, the loser of that match was also going to have to leave Southeastern immediately. And that was Ron Bass. He was fighting Joe LeDuc. And basically it was in a bull rope match, and by golly, that meant it was a fight.
Hey, I tell you what, that's a great card right there. Two championship matches with back-to-back loser leaves matches, with three wrestlers having to leave the territory in that night alone. Hey, I tell you what, I think this is a good spot for a break. Let's do that right now. I can't wait to hear what happens in this TV show and actually see for the first time what you selected for us in the first ever videos to be seen on a Studcast. Hang with us. We're going to check that out next, right here. Okay, Studcast fans, this new Studcast is the first to have the ability to show actual matches from TV shows produced 44 years ago. This has been Ron's goal since creating the Studcast. He wants to give the very best to his fans. The only platform that makes it possible is his TennesseeStudStreaming.com channel. TennesseeStudStreaming.com. He's been waiting for years for this. 381 episodes, and all fans have to do is subscribe to the streaming channel and spend $4.99 per month. $4.99 per month. $1.25 per week for not only the best Studcast ever, but hundreds of more hours of entertainment that he is adding for free. After the next 2 weeks, the only place you're going to get the new Studcast with its videos is TennesseeStudStreaming.com. Please don't let $4.99 keep you from the best wrestling podcast in the world. All right, everybody, welcome back in. It's another Studcast with the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller. I'm David Summers. This is Studcast 381. It's called Three More Gone, First Video Studcast. All right, so set it up for us, Ron. How did this TV show open up?
Well, it was another, man, of the different openings that we kind of been experimenting with during this time frame, the early 80s. This time, we put Les Thatcher in Studio B with Don Carson and the Mongolian Stomper. And it was after the regular opening, the first thing that they saw after they, you know, we had a normally same opening. And it was a pretty nice, it was one of the first that was ever done, basically with cartoonish characters. And it was a pretty good, decent opening. But as soon as the opening was done, the first thing that anybody saw was the Tennessee Stud coming to the rescue of Johnny Valiant. But with both the Mongolian Stomper, who was his scheduled opponent, Don Carson was pounding the heck out of the guy from New York. And so I went down to try to help Johnny. And so Don Carson didn't allow Les to show much of what was happening there, because it was way too obvious that there was two guys working on one, you know. And so Carson yelled to the director to stop the video. And you know how Don was, he kind of believed that he was part of the production crew.
of course he was.
Yeah, you know, and he wanted to take over as usual here. And this was one of those spots. And he started declaring his and his Stomper's next tag match in the arenas was going to be the most important match in the history of Southeastern wrestling. So he continued by saying, you know, he said, fans just saw Ron Fuller, you know, who lost a loser leave town match to my Stomper a couple of months ago. And he says now, you know, and I call him Ron Fuller because that's who he is and everybody knows it. And he's illegally back in Southeastern as a masked man known as the Tennessee Stud. And he said, you know, he viciously attacked me and my Stomper for no reason. And then he said that going to be the beginning of the end. Basically, he said he shouldn't have done that, you know, because, you know, Les Thatcher, he gets, that's the beginning of the end for not just Ron Fuller, but also for Johnny Valiant. Yeah, the end of him in Southeastern history, because we're headed into a match in which both of the losers of the tag match have to leave Southeastern. So he told Les he was going to try and tell everybody what this was all about, because he was too upset. And he said, you know, he'd been taking heart pills ever since he was informed of this upcoming match, you know.
Okay.
He was really on his game, you know, and he said it had absolutely the worst rules he had ever heard of in a professional wrestling match. And he said he was sure that he and his stomper were going to end up in jail because they might kill somebody next week in the ring. But at that point, Les jumped in because if you didn't, you didn't get to talk when Carson was out there. So Les was happy to get some control, but he was almost at a loss for words, especially with that last frightening prediction from Carson that somebody was going to die. So Les explained the rules for the match, and they were somewhat different than, you know, but Les admitted they were a little different than I'd ever heard of before, some of them. But he said, but it certainly didn't require killing somebody. He said it was simply a tag match. And he goes, the Tennessee Stud and Johnny Valor are going to be against you, Don Carson, and the Stomper. And the losers leave Southeastern. And I say losers because both of the losers have to leave. And there had to be a winner in the match. So Les said and that was the only stipulation he said that he had really never heard of before, is that both of the losers in the team had to leave. And then he threw in the word immediately. So the studio crowd, obviously they're in another studio, but they're seeing this. And wow, they popped as soon as Les has basically said, the losers got to leave immediately. And he's talking to Carson, and the Stompers are hanging over his shoulder there. And so the studio crowd, they popped in the other studio, and you could hear the pop from that studio. So Carson grabbed the microphone away from Les at this point, and he said, you know, basically he started talking to the people that had responded in the other studio, and he called them all idiots. You idiots over there in the other studio, you know, he said something about, you don't know my Stomper's history. He said, you know, I have to control him all the time, he says, because he's almost killed before. And therefore, Les Thatcher, he says, I will take no responsibility for his actions this next week. And he says to Les, he goes, you, Les Thatcher, Charlie Platt, Don Curtis, all the idiots over there in that studio, and those idiots at home watching. He just really got everybody in this one. And he said, I warn you, don't come to the arena if you have a weak heart. He said, Johnny Valiant and Ron Fuller, your Southeastern champion, are done. And he goes, and now all of you have been duly warned. And at that point, he grabbed the Stomper, and they just went straight out of the studio, but straight to the ring, because they were actually in the first match.
Mm-hmm. All right, this is a side note, and I got to ask you real quick, because I thought, as far as the first heel I ever knew was Don Carson. How far along do you think Don Carson would have been in wrestling if he came in and started his career into the 80s and moved into the 90s? Do you think that, because I thought he was that gifted, and I remember and seen a lot of these videos on your channel. So how far along do you think he would have been if his career had started later in the let's just say WWE era?
Do you think
he would have hit any sort of heights like Bobby Heenan? Because I thought Don Carson was that gifted easily.
Don Carson had the gift of gab, man, and he could really, really talk. And also, you know, he had the great gimmick of the black glove. If he had come along in the 90s, he'd have been a very, very wealthy guy in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And the great thing about Don, for him personally, is when he got too old to wrestle, he could still talk.
And
he still got paid big time.
Yeah.
Sometimes he was more useful in talking than he was in the ring.
Yeah.
So he was quite a character, man.
I was always amazed by how he can control the crowd inside the Houston County Farm Center. I mean, control that crowd. If he wanted to get a or in the TV studio, it was the same. He knew exactly where to hit them in the gut, the crowd, and how to get the reaction and the kind of reaction that he wanted. And it just seemed like it came so easy for him. All right.
It was called timing. His timing was excellent.
Absolutely. I just thought he was one of the best. I have never heard an opening like that on a TV show or Don Carson say something like that. But knowing him, I'm pretty sure that he did. All right. So what happened in that first TV match? Set it up for us.
Well, their opponents basically were already in the ring. And, so Carson and Stomper, they came busting out of the second studio. And they went not just straight to the ring. They went straight for the two guys that were in the ring. And so the announcer, he was scared to death anyway. He took off running. He never announced the match at all. He left the ring. And Carson and Stomper, they were like two lunatics. I mean, they were like out of their mind. And so Stomper threw both of the opponents that were in the ring out of the ring. And then he went out there and stomped them on the concrete. I guess he felt like, well, I can do more damage if they're out here on the concrete. And then he threw them back in the ring. And then he came in and continued his destruction. I mean, he was just crazy. So then Carson stood in the middle of the ring. He just kind of stood there and watched him. And then he just slowly started loading his black glove right in front of the referee. The referee couldn't stop the stomper. He's kind of looking at Carson, like, what are you going to do here, man? He's going to kill these guys. And, the referee, Stomper, grabbed the referee. The guys are laying now. They can't even get up anymore. And he grabbed the referee. And Carson finished loading his glove, and he hit the referee. And the referee had, wow. He went down like a rock, man. And, bell started ringing. Somebody was trying to get control of the match. So then the Stomper, once he went down, Johnny Valiant and I, we're actually back in our dressing room, and each dressing room had a TV monitor in it, so you could see what was going on. And we saw this, somebody's got to stop this, right? So we went straight to the ring. I took off first, and Valiant came behind me. And so then both Carson and the Stomper, they jumped out of the ring. It wasn't a fight or anything. They went straight into the dressing room. And I guess Carson thought he definitely made his point, right? Talked about somebody's going to get killed. And, and he looked like he was going to try to do it right there on TV.
That's how you open a TV show right there. All right, so it was going to be kind of hard to follow a match like that, though, I think. All right, so who was next in the ring?
Well, I'd have to say, Dave, that this is going to be a pretty good way to follow that match. We're going to go back 44 years ago, man, to the third week in December of 1980. We're going to actually show a video of Johnny Valiant and I. And we had just chased the Don Carson. We had just chased those guys out of the ring. And this is going to be the first Southeastern match to ever be shown a piece of it. This is just going to be a piece of it, of a stud cast. And we're going to make that happen in this one right here. And we have a new behind-the-scenes member of our stud cast team here. And his name is Brian Logan. And so we're gonna do something that we've never done on a studcast before. We're going to show some video.
All right, I think it's a great way to start these videos from the past with the Tennessee Stud and the present Southeastern champion in 1980 when this was recorded. All right, so Brian is going to set it up for us from 44 years ago.
Introducing in the corner to my left. At 255 pounds from the Volunteer State of Tennessee, the current Southeastern heavyweight champion, the Tennessee Stud. The Tennessee Stud. His opponent at 225 pounds from parts unknown, the Scorpion. Scorpion.
Scorpion taking on the Southeastern heavyweight champion, the Tennessee Stud.
Our first look at the Scorpion, Charlie, but of course the Tennessee Stud.
Strange venue out here. And the Scorpion, lacking the size, weight, and height there, opens up early.
catches the stud with a knee, doubles him up, and the Scorpion trying to put his opponent away in a hurry. The stud has yet to get a good start, or any start at all, Charlie. The Scorpion continuing to work on the Tennessee stud, but he comes out of that corner head first into that turnbuckle. The stud now mounting an offense, and this man is awesome once he gets going. The elbow by the stud now. The Scorpion certainly dazed by that one, and the stud lifts him 69 inches in the air and slams him. Tennessee stud closing in on the Scorpion. I can see the Scorpion didn't feel any different about this match than I did, Charlie. It was either an early start or no start at all. He put it together early, but the stud with that backbreaker and keeps his man. And again, two backbreakers. Let's see it. No, he's not going to put him away here. He wants to go with him a little bit. Takes his man into a suplex position up high. And that's a long way down, Charlie. An elbow and another elbow. And the stud apparently using this man as an example, and he's got a win. Your winner of the match, the Southeastern Heavyweight Champion, the Tennessee Stud. More action to come on Southeastern Wrestling.
All right, wow. I had no idea what to expect. I was impressed with the quality of something produced 44 years ago. You didn't have any mercy on that smaller opponent, did you, Stud?
What does mercy have to do with wrestling, Dave? Not much mercy in that sport, especially when he jumped me from behind, man. He was lucky he didn't get worse than he got, man. So,
well, you turned your back on him, and he immediately attacked you from behind, and it lasted a few seconds, and you quickly turned the tables. All right, so how about the personality profile, and what was it all about?
Well, it was Charlie and Les with Johnny Valiant and the Tennessee Stud, and I just finished this match. I was went straight basically over to the profile set with Johnny, and the profile was all about the upcoming match that Don Carson had opened the TV show with, and that they had been such idiots with in the first match in the ring, and they were so angry about it. They were concerned about it, what they really were, is concerned about it. And a match where he and the Stomper were facing Valiant and the Stud, losers, the tag match, both of them had to leave Southeastern immediately. I mean, it's a pretty heavy-duty match, obviously. So Valiant and I watched the video from the week before where Don Carson got involved in a match between the Stomper and Valiant. Carson got down there, he loaded his glove, he hit Valiant with his glove, and it was kind of the entire reason for this upcoming loser leave tag match. That's how basically I got started. And I was watching, and Johnny got popped by Carson with the black glove, and he started bleeding, and so I went down to help him. And I had to help him back to the dressing room. And Johnny made a big deal out of this about how much he looked forward to this upcoming tag match, man. Yeah, Ron. Well, he was going to tell me all he was going to do. And, you know, so that kind of leads us to the next video, which we're going to show right now. This is going to be the end of that loser leave match. So we're going to see what happened in this match. It's supposed to be me and Johnny against Stomper and Carson. So that's what our next one's going to be.
All right, so in the next video, we're going to see what happened in the actual match 44 years ago where both losers had to leave Southeastern, right?
That's correct. But there's a lot more to it, though. So when it came time for that match 44 years earlier, the Stomper and Carson were in the ring. But Johnny Valiant was a strange dude, he didn't even dress and to go to the ring or make an attempt to be my partner. So we went to the ring together, and he made an announcement over the building's microphone that his doctor, now he didn't tell me any of this. He said, my doctor talked to me, he goes, last week you saw what happened to me here. I got a concussion and my doctor talked to me and he will not allow me to wrestle tonight. And then he just got out of the ring and he went back to the dressing room.
Are you serious? All right. So what happened then?
Well, Carson said, you know, since I had no partner, you know, and he said, you know, it's really not a problem. He says, if you're going to be willing to wrestle both of us, Tennessee Stud, he goes, there's no problem here. And then he said, you can decide that you can want to go back to the dressing room too. And he goes, yeah. And then you'll suffer the consequences of losing the loser lead match. And you'll be gone again. And I know all these fans can say goodbye to the Tennessee Stud. Right? So the crowd went crazy booing, obviously, right? They didn't like that idea. Neither did I.
Yeah, I bet. All right. So what did you do?
Well, I started wrestling both of them by myself, you know, and I mean, somebody's got to wrestle them, and you know, I'm not going to lose or leave and never even get beat. So Bob Armstrong had wrestled in the match right before mine, and it was against Condrey and Rose. Him and Brad were wrestling against Condrey and Rose, and they had busted Bob's eye. And so when Bob came to the ring, you know, he'd already been in a match before. He was already had been bleeding. They'd started the blood. He stopped bleeding, but you know, he was basically a beaten man. You know, so he got up in my corner, and boy, when he climbed up in the ring in my corner, that building went crazy, man. So I was about to lose. I mean, thank God he got there when he did, and I fought like crazy, and I got over and I tagged him, and. That's where let's begin this next video, man, with what happened from there. And this is an actual video from 44 years earlier. I've fought to get to Bob. Bob comes in, and let's just take it from there. It's a pretty amazing end to this.
Really cool stuff, Ron. What a great way to do this. Johnny Valiant had left you while a hurt Bob Armstrong was trying to keep you from having to leave Southeastern again. All right, so Brian is going to set it up and he's going to roll the video for us. By the way, if you're listening on a podcast, audio only, you'll hear the audio. Obviously, you won't see the video, so we're going to roll it right now.
At this point, Bob's already come down to help me and had already made a strong comeback, but these guys were just with the glove and the boot and everything else a little bit too much for Bob, and Bob had been bleeding previously. He'd already been hurt earlier in the night and shouldn't have been out there to begin with, really.
Well, John, of course, the decision not to wrestle with the Tennessee Stud in this particular match was not a decision of your liking.
Well, exactly right, Les Thatcher. I mean, you know, when a doctor talks to me anymore, you know, it used to be years ago when somebody said something, I'll say, well, hey, I'll show you how tough I am. I'll get there. I'll fly to wherever I have to go to wrestle, and I'll get up and I do it, and I did it. But I'll tell you something, as the years go by and the injuries seem to increase, you learn from the different things. You know, just like you make a mistake in the ring, sometimes it causes you to win or lose or whatever. Sometimes you make a mistake to wrestle when you're injured. I mean, these things are postponed. I mean, hey, look at Duran and that fight with Leonard. I mean, sure, it might be controversial, but Duran had the cramps. I mean, hey, I had a tremendous injury in my head. And it was a concussion. The man told me, hey, Valiant, you go in the ring one more time. Unless you take a little time off here, you're going to terminate your career. So what's the big choice?
And speaking of terminating careers, that's just what Bob and I are doing at this point. We've ended up with Carson's glove and with the Stomper's boot, and we're about to terminate Don Carson's residence in this particular part of the country right there. And you won't see Carson around anymore,
right,
nor the Stomper anymore.
Okay, and I'm curious. Was that Johnny Valiant talking in the video?
Yes, it was, you know, and you know, we're kind of still at the desk there, and we're talking about, you know, he's trying to make, you know, to make up for what happened in this match, you know, and that he had just walked out on me, to, you know, flat left me, people that actually got to see this video here, this action here, they noticed that Don Carson and the Stomper were never counted out in the video. But the referee, but wow, me and Bob Armstrong, we pile drive Don Carson. It's so good that, he must not have, I don't know how he walked around for a week. So the referee made a decision, and the Stomper drug him out of the ring, and he took him to the dressing room. I'm surprised he didn't throw him over his shoulder, because Carson was gone. He was done.
Yeah.
They went to the dressing room, and the referee counted them out and rang the bell, and by gosh, they lost the match, and they weren't going to return for a long time.
All right, what I was going to say, you had me laughing because all I could think of was having seen the video was Don Carson's hair, and of course he had that beautiful blonde hair. He called it beautiful blonde hair, but when he got into a situation like that and that hair was standing up in all places that except where it shouldn't be, it always looked funny. He looked like a clown. It always looked funny. That's an interesting piece of video. All right, so how about the next TV segment? Who was in that?
Well, we're going to have a much longer video next week, this is our first one, and we had two small ones. We're going to start to add more video because I love it, and Ron Bass, went to the set, and he was going to take on the bull rope match from the week before, he watched that video this is after the profile's done now at this point. And then he predicts that he's going to, all the things he's going to do to Joe LaDuke. And this was going to be their second bull rope match in 2 weeks. Wow. That in itself was a major deal. I mean, it was hard to get over one of those in a month, much less in 1 week. And so this upcoming match with was the other loser leaves Southeastern match was on the card. Joe LaDuke ended up being the guy in the ring, and Joe got his last TV win in that match.
All right. So who was in the last TV segment?
Well, it was Bob and Brad, man. And they were joined. They went down and joined Les and Charlie at the set, and they watched their return match for the tag belts. And they won that match by disqualification, and they were coming back in a no disqualification match because they wanted to get their belts back. And they knew that these guys were going to get disqualified every match in order to keep their belts. So that was the only way they had a good opportunity to get it. And then Dennis Condrey and Randy Rose, they were in the last TV match. They wore their belts to the ring, and wow, those boys look like champions, man. And they look like the champions they were.
I bet they did. All right, so another great TV show, no doubt about it. What about in the arenas the next week?
Well, Ricky Fields got a win over Oki Shekina. Roy Lee Welch failed to Mr. Saito. I guess that's a good way of putting it. It was much worse than falling, but, Saito was a hoss. Jerry Stubbs got another win over Norvell Austin in another one of their United States Junior Heavyweight Championship matches. In the Southeastern Tag Championship match, Dennis Condrey and Randy Rose, the champions, they kind of did the same thing that Stomper and them had done the week before. They left the ring, and they got counted out. But the Armstrongs couldn't win the belts on a count out either. So it was just like a disqualification, except they figured out how to do it without getting disqualified. And at the end of the night, in those two loser leave matches, Don Carson, the Mongolian Stomper, and Joe LaDuke, all three, left and ended their current run for this time frame, at least in Southeastern.
Wow. Okay, that was a big moment, especially on that TV show or in the arena, of course. All right. So tell us about the attendances in the four key cities. Always interesting to hear how they did in those different markets.
Well, Birmingham was close to 6,000 the week before, 5,700. It went up another 100 fans, and we're looking at the basically the about the third week in You know, December, man, this is time, hard time to be building crowds and having big crowds. Mobile was also up about 100 to 4,800. Montgomery was down a little bit, down to 3,200. But Dothan was up 200 to 4,300 again.
Hard to believe with all that you've covered today that we're going to have enough time for another Learning Tree question, Stud. All right, so
I'd like to do something a little different.
Okay. Dave. Okay.
Okay. You know, basically, since this is New Year's Day, 2025, I'd like to tell a little story today, a real story that happened to me the night before New Year's Eve, 49 years ago in 1965. I was a senior in high school. Playing basketball for Briarcliff High School in Atlanta, Georgia. And it was the fourth high school I'd attended in the last 3 years in three different states. So I'd never played on the same team hardly at all, ever. So my father did not like me playing basketball. And he always said, you know, he said, you're never going to be anything but a skinny punk, kid, if you keep playing that game. You know, and he said, but he had never seen me play. You know, he had never come and watched me play. So we had a great team this year. And, you know, at this point, we're in the, you know, first of the year. And we're undefeated. We got a 10-0 record. And so we're playing in the finals of the biggest high school tournament in Atlanta back in those days. It was in Cross Keys was the name of the school. I remember the name of the school. And so we played that night basically for the championship of Atlanta. And although living in Atlanta, my father owned a large farm just south of there. So about noon on the morning of the finals for this big tournament, my dad comes to me and he asks me, he says, boy, you want to take a ride? Let's go down to the farm, which is about 30 miles south of Atlanta. And he said, let's just check things out and play around a little bit, you know. And he said, I promise you, I'll get you back here plenty of time to go to the game tonight. You know, so when we got there, he got out of the car and he got on his bulldozer, and a big old bulldozer, and he cranked her up and here he went. And, you know, so he worked on the bulldozer for 2 hours or more, you know, and I sat in the car waiting on him, like, well, what kind of deal is this? So when he finally stopped in late afternoon, he opened the trunk of his car and he had back there two axes and he handed me one. And we walked about a half a mile down the road to where there were some logs and we started cutting some firewood for nobody in particular. I said, you know, so I asked him, you know, I said, what's this all about? You know, and knowing him, you know, what I was referring to, and because he knew basically right away what I was referring to, he kind of ignored me. Said, oh, we're going to chop up some firewood here for your mother's relatives that live on the farm here. So, and I reminded him right away, you know, hey, I got this game, Dad. You know, and he goes, you know, and I need to meet the coach and the team at the bus at the high school at 6 o'clock, you know, and then I'm going to ride with them over to play the game. And he says, oh, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. We'll be all right. I'll get you there. And, then he said, and at that point I was already sweating. We didn't have any water to drink, not even any water to drink.
Wow.
And basically, I was doing about the worst thing you could do before you go and play a basketball game, wearing myself out. Right?
So I expect your arms would be like spaghetti. So, wow. All right. Had he ever done anything like this before?
No, you know, but he continued to find little things that needed to be done, you know, and it's getting late, you know, so. So we didn't leave the farm until about after 5 o'clock, and there was no way possibly that we were going to drive back into the far side of Atlanta in an hour and be there in time to catch the bus with the rest of the team that's going to play the game that night.
Right, right.
So when we arrived at the school, the bus was gone. And so he says, well, okay, we'll take you back home. You change your clothes and, Robert will go with us and we'll take you to the game. So I barely had time to get my uniform on once I got there to the game, didn't even get to do the whole warm-ups with the team and just barely got there in time to do the deal. So him and Rob decided to stay and to watch me play. Well, Rob had seen me play a lot of times, but, this was the first time my father ever saw me play. So I was already exhausted before the game started. I did this all day, it was a big gym, and it was sold out, man. And so there was a guy that sat next to my dad and to Rob, and that guy, he recognized Dad, and he said, "Hey, you Buddy Fuller," and that wasn't uncommon in Georgia because Dad was a big star. Now, back in those days, wrestling was extremely popular.
Yeah.
So at some point in their conversation, this guy asked, my dad asked the guy, he says, why are you here? They were having a little conversation. And the guy said, I'm a sports writer. And he said, I work with the Atlanta Journal, which is the biggest paper in Atlanta at that point.
Right.
And he said, they sent me here to check out this high school player. So my dad asked him, he says, who is that? Or what player is that? And the guy said, well, his name is Ronald Welch.
Oh, all right. Wait. So did your father tell him that you were his son? And how did you play after working most of the day with all of the added anxiety of maybe missing the game entirely?
So Robert said that Dad never said anything about who he was, right?
Oh,
who I was, and the guy didn't put the Welch name and the Fuller name together.
Yeah, right.
He didn't pick up on that.
Right.
So after the game, he stood there with the sports writer and then, they were giving out awards to the best players. And I guess Dad didn't tell him because he was concerned, that he might have to make an excuse to the guy if he had to tell him that, I took this kid out and kept him out all afternoon and I didn't want him to play in the game, basically. And so he just let it slide. Right. So luckily, we won the game. And then I had a good game. I scored 22 points. I had 22 rebounds.
Whoa, wait. 22 points and 22 rebounds.
22 rebounds,
or did they even count?
I remember because of 22 and 22.
Did they even count assist back then? So it
I don't know if they did assist or whatever.
But
they kept up with rebounds.
It was definitely a double-double.
Good rebounder. I was a pretty good rebounder, Dave.
Yeah.
In my high school year, my senior year, I had 500 rebounds in 24 games.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, okay, so you were probably guilty of committing a bunch of double-doubles in your time, obviously way back before triple-doubles were the thing.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So, wow.
Also won the trophy for the most valuable player in the tournament.
Wow.
So after the trophy was awarded, I guess my father thought he was in the clear. So he told a sports writer who I was. he was, and I guess he was like, hey, knowing Dad, he was probably, he's like, I'm a little proud now of him. I can tell you, that's my boy.
Wow. All right. So listen, I've heard you tell part of this or a good portion of this, but you certainly added some details on this one. That was a great story, Stud.
No, man, it's not quite the end of the story. Okay.
Okay.
So after the game, my dad and Rob, they never said anything to me about this guy, And so I went back to the school with my team and my mom came and picked me up and she took me home. And when I got home, Dad and Rob were in the bed. So the next morning when I got up, we always had breakfast together, and I went to the breakfast table, and there was the paper. We had we had them delivering the paper, and it was open to the sports page, and it was right there in the middle of the table, and I couldn't help but read the headline. The headline of the paper, right? And it says, "Wrestler's son leads Briarcliff victory."
Wow.
So in the story, basically, I read the story, and it had more to say about my dad than it had to say about me.
Yeah, okay, so there was no doubt that he obviously knew who your daddy was, and that's funny. All right, so you never know with a great storyteller when the story is over. And this is another example of the upcoming Story Time with the Stud that you're thinking about, possibly the two new 30-minute studcast.
Yeah, I really hadn't made a decision on that yet, you know.
All right.
I like to tell a story every once in a while. And, this one says a whole lot about my relationship with my dad.
Some of the first stories you told me were on the back porch. We were staring out into the woods, and that's when you first started talking about, hey, I've thought about doing a podcast or writing a book, and which kind of turned into a podcast. All right. So. All right, this is you've had such an incredible life. I can't wait to hear more of these stories and all that is coming very soon with the new Studcast and the streaming channel. Well, no doubt about it, this one has been crowned with a little bit of everything. I love the two videos from 44 years ago and your story about your father. So where are we going to be writing on the next Studcast?
I was really concerned about the videos working well, to be honest with you, Dave. But now I think, you know, we can kind of open up and add a little more of them. And it's hard to describe what it's like to see yourself and remember those days. Wow. It took me back. It freaked me out a little bit. Carson Stomper and Joe LeDuc, they went north after this last studcast, after this last card, I'm sorry. But next week, we're going to be covering Christmas Day in 1980. In the Mobile Main Arena with another massive crowd. There's also somebody special on that Christmas card. At least he was special to me. Fans had not seen him in months. He had what appeared to be a change of heart, and Jimmy Golden was back. And man, how good it was to see him in the ring again.
Wow, and for those, and maybe there's going to be more about this soon, but for those who may have forgotten, you talked about this in one of the Studcasts. He had a pretty serious injury that he thought was going to keep him out of the business for years to come. And so that is great news. And it sounds like another great one coming. I hope everyone has a wonderful New Year's Day. Joins us again next week for another great Studcast. All right. Any last comments, Ron?
Well, I hope everybody had a great Christmas, and I hope they're going to have a happy New Year. And as always, thanks all of you for your support. Please take care of yourselves and others, and may God bless us all.
All right, for Ron Fuller in the Great Smoky Mountains, I'm David Summers saying thank you for listening. This Studcast is a David Summers production for Tennessee Stud, LLC.
Thanks for joining us today for this historic Studcast. The true story continues next week. So full Nelson your friends and point them in our direction for another ride with the Tennessee Stud.
One, two, three.
This is David Summers saying so long from the Great Smoky Mountains.